8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
A very good evening to you, and you're welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, Tema motorway to undergo maintenance. Will the rehabilitation result in closure of the road to traffic? We'll hear from the Roads and Highways Minister. NPP vetting committee gives green light to Paul Afoko to contest party's national chairmanship position. To go or not to go, Nana Akufo-Addo sees consultation on his position for the 2016 NPP flag bearership. And 1 month after Bank of Ghana directives to prop up the city, how are things so far? Join me in the next hour as we discuss these issues. You can also join the discussions by text on 0266-677570. 0266-677570. But first, Rosemary Gazy is here with a summary of the day's news.
Government has released more than 55 million Ghana cedis to the Electoral Commission to conduct local government-level elections. In an interview with Radio Ghana, the public relations officer of the commission, Christian Owusu-Pari, denied that the EC has postponed the elections for this year. He explained that October has been chosen depending on timely release of funds by government. As the issue of workers' salaries and the single spend pay policy continues to attract debate, many have been the views of the public on the matter. While some disagree that it should be suspended, others think that government should commence negotiations for retrenchment in the public sector to cut down on the current huge wage bill. The proliferation of fake ID cards has resulted in the call for re-registration of SIM cards. Communications Minister Dr. Edward Omane-Boamah, who hinted this at the forum in Accra, said that re-registration will be done when the National Identification Authority completes the issuance of national ID cards, which will serve as the only form of identification for the exercise. And in order to reduce the pressure on the ferry at Sinchi due to the closure of the Adomi Bridge, the Deputy Volta Regional Minister, Francis Ganyaglo, is appealing to drivers and commuters from Ho to Accra to consider using other routes, like the Ho-Adaklo-Sogakofe Road. Mr. Ganyaglo made the appeal at Accra Day when he and some district chief executives visited the area.
Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Unique FM 95.7 in Accra, Ura Radio 89.7 in Bolgatanga, and Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa. The Tema motorway will undergo major maintenance. Will that result in the closure of the motorway? The Minister of Roads and Highways, Alhaji Amidu Sulemani, is on the line to tell us now. Good evening, Alhaji, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, Martha, and good evening to your cherished listeners. Unique.
Alhaji, can you confirm to us about the closure or that Tema motorway is to undergo repair works or rehabilitation?
Well, thank you again. Yesterday, we got information that one of the bridges on the motorway had a hole on it. So we sent our bridges vision there to look at it. We thought it was important so that we could cover it. But one day we went, they realized that it was more than what we expected. So we have to do replace the whole slab on that bridge. So in the meantime, before we do that, we may need to divert traffic before we can do that. So what we are doing is that we are not closing the motorway. When you are getting to that portion, it's opposite the abattoir, but on the Tema Accra bound lane. When you are getting to the place, we will divert the traffic back to the Accra Tema bound lane. Then you just pass the bridge and we send you back again to your Tema lane. So we are not closing the motorway. We are going to work around the bridge, and that will require that we do some diversion around the area. We're not closing it.
And how long will it take to complete the repair works?
Well, we're going to remove the whole slab on the Accra-bound bridge, part of the bridge, and recast it. And this is cement, well, more time, there's one you cast, sometimes you will need some period to cure. So you will need some 3 days to cure, maybe in about 3 weeks, 4 weeks to cure.
Three weeks or four weeks?
Yeah, okay, because you will need to, as I'm working on it, you will need to leave it to cure before people can use it.
So specifically, it is not a rehabilitation of the motorway in general.
We found a problem and we have to make it good. It's not a major rehabilitation of the motorway.
Well, I'm sure with this, there will be a heavy flow of traffic. What measures...
There is already heavy flow of traffic. I had opportunity myself to move on the motorway. I went down to turn aside and moved on it, that canoe, and it's terrible. But in the circumstances, there's very little we can do on, apart from what we have to do now, the arrangement we have to do to make motorists still move on the motorway whilst we carry out the repairs.
And that will take about 3 or 4 weeks?
Because even if we remove it, it will take some time to remove the slab and then cast a new one, and they will have to take some time again for it to cure.
So, again, about the traffic situation, what measures is being put in place to at least...
Well, I even asked my maintenance unit to work this evening. So we requested police to protect, help control the traffic at the place whilst we carry out the works. It's extremely difficult, but why don't the police assist us manage the traffic on the motorway for now?
Well, again, we want to seek for clarification. What works are being done on the road?
As I said, it's just only on the bridge that is, let me use the word for you to understand, broken, that we are going to work on now. That is the works we are carrying on now. But in the process, we will do a diversion around that bridge, but still on the motorway, bringing traffic from the terminal down the car lane, you reach that bridge, we'll send you back onto the car down terminal lane, then you move out away from the bridge and come back again onto your terminal car lane. That's what is going to happen.
But what is the plan for the major rehabilitation of the Tema motorway?
Well, the major, you know, the motorway is supposed to be done under public-private partnership, where we, and our required tool in that proposal, we are expecting to construct a 3-lane on either side. That will make a 6-lane motorway. And that certainly is going to be tolled. So that is the proposal.
And how soon will that also be?
Come again.
How soon will that major rehabilitation work take
place? Well, we are working along with the World Bank, and we've secured a transaction advisor that is a consultant to look at the works involved and what possibilities are there. Then when that is done, we'll go ahead and call the private sector to come in.
So what are assurances do you have for motorists and the public for the next 3 weeks?
Well, the motorway, the traffic will still be moving on the motorway. It's just that when you get to that small portion, that you will inconvenience, because you have to get back to that car, from a bound lane, but the traffic will still move on the motorway. When you pass the bridge, the normal traffic will move towards Accra. And when you pass the bridge, the normal traffic will move. That's where the traffic from Accra might continue to move.
Well, Alhaji, want to thank you for your time with us tonight, Alhaji.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Sulemane is the Minister of Roads and Highways. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. The green lights for Paul Afoko's eligibility to contest the NPP national chairmanship position has now been given. Matters relating to his eligibility were held in abeyance pending the outcome of a petition against his candidature. The NPP national chairman aspirant Paul Afoko is now cleared by the vetting committee. So how is he taking the news? Tonight on Behind the News, we've been joined on the line by the aide to Mr. Afoko, George Duka. Good evening, George, and you are welcome to the program.
Thank you, my sister.
How did Mr. Afoko receive this news?
Let me say good evening to your cherished listeners. He was very happy. He commended the committee for the good job work done so far, and as he's been touting that he knew nothing about the said petition, and he mentioned that it was frivolous, and indeed today they've vindicated him. So he's happy, and he's now asking the party to come united and build bridges for the future rather than looking behind.
But then when this issue, the petition came, the issue of this petition came about, how did he take it?
Oh, very sober. And he was all along mentioning that he knew nothing about it, so we should be confident and move on. So he went about campaigning and selling his message, what he can do best for the party, assuring them that come 2016, he is going to take the flag bearer, whoever is elected, to the Flagstaff House.
Were the contents of the petition made known to him, and does he know who was behind the petition?
Fortunately, today, the petition was read to him, and the name or the bearer of the petition was also made known to him. And they mentioned one David Jesse. In fact, I have been a constituency executive in both central and western region. I have been a municipal chief executive also in western region, Takwa to be precise. But I have not come across such David, you see. So we are not prepared. We don't want to go hunting for David, you see, or whoever that name is. But what we are telling the party faithfuls is to, you know, stay united, stay focused, keep on praying for Paul Afoko, so that come 12 April, victory will be ours.
But what was contained in the petition?
That he was in prison in UK. He lived in UK for 21 years with Paul Afoko, and he knew when Paul was killed, and that he dealt in drugs and so on.
But let me ask you, George, so what was Mr. Afoko doing whilst waiting for the outcome of the investigations into this particular petition?
He was campaigning. He was in the three northern regions. He went to Tamale, went to Bolga, came back to Wa. So we came from Wa just about 2 weeks ago.
And how was his campaign?
Very, very well. People were meeting us with hope. They were meeting us with pride of having, in a northerner, coming to contest, having even the heart to contest. Because if you look at our history, we haven't, got a northerner contesting such a position before.
And how about him? His message to the delegates?
Yes, his message is to stay united, and that he has a new plan for MPP. And he's taking MPP to power come 2016. That has been his message, that until we do away with factionalism within the party, we can't see power. So we do our best to do away with factionalism and move on as a party, as a family, come together and win 2016. So he is all out that he's going to stay neutral as a chairman. He's not going to back any candidate. He's going to ensure that logistics that are needed for 2016 are provided before the election period.
George, would you say that this issue with the petition did not affect his campaign or support base?
You know, the only thing that I can dwell on is time, because he had to explain to delegates why, things that transpired in vetting, instead of, putting his energy in his message, he was rather answering questions, because they were posing a lot of questions. How, why are they doing this? What is the petition about? Is it going to affect your campaign? They're going to get you out of the contest? And so he had to take his time in explaining these questions. And that took a lot of his time. So I would say it's time that, got off from him. Apart from that, he went on to, explain his vision to the delegate.
So how is he making up for the time lost?
Yes, he's now telling delegates he's going to move to the Volta region soon. You come back to Greater Accra, and now I can say God has done about 50% of his job for him.
Now, George, the petition raised some ethnic sentiments, as you mentioned, that the party did not want a northerner. Is that not an issue that he was worried about?
No, the petition did not state anything, with regards to ethnicity. There wasn't anything of that sort, actually. And, when you went home, when I mentioned the three northern regions, and you know where he comes from, he is from the Upper East. So there's one of their own is in, and that they were going to throw their support for him. And we're not being or playing the ethnic card here. NPP, National First Vice, current National First Vice, a northerner. And we know that looking at how even the UP was formed, it was formed with Ganshi Mape, the Trans-Togoland Party, the NSM, the Northern People's Party, coming together to form UP. And that is our tradition. And it tells you how nationalistic MPP is. So we are not playing tribal card, but we know and we believe that Dumbo has been reincarnated. And that Tuala Fuko is going to win come 12 April. That one should be a must, and God has even ordained it.
All right, Georgia, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight, George.
Thank you, my dear sister.
George Duka is aide to Paul Afoko, who is aspiring for the national chairmanship position of the NPP. And we are also joined on the line by the Director of Elections of the NPP, Martin Ejimensa. Kosa. Good evening, sir. You're welcome to the program.
Evening.
Well, Mr. Kosa, how did the vetting committee conclude that Mr. Foko should now be allowed to contest the NPP national chairmanship position?
Before you proceed, who are you talking to on the other side of the line?
George Duka, who is the aide to Paul Afoko.
George who?
Duka.
George Duka?
Yeah.
I don't know him. But I just want to put on record, at this point, moving forward, from today's decision, we expect calmness, we expect truthfulness, we expect honesty. Mr. George, whatever, has not seen the petition written against Mr. Foko. He has not seen it. But I note an attempt to want to speak to the petition. I'm wondering where he's getting this information from. He has not seen the petition. Except you can get him back to come and say he has seen the petition and that he's speaking from that petition. There's been so much of falsehood that is being bandied around. We don't need that moving on at this point.
But what was
Let
in
me
the
again
petition?
On record, that I'm aware, I'm just reading something that has been brought to my notice from one of the networks. Though not yours, but specifically Joy Online, that according to comprehensive report from a UK court, that again is false. The vetting committee does not have the report we requested for before us yet. And that is a matter of public record. We use state institutions to conduct investigations. We do not have the report yet.
So you are saying the report is not yet out?
It's not yet out. It's not yet out. We haven't received it yet. But time is of the essence. And in the wisdom of this committee.
Well, it's unfortunate we lost Mr. J. Mensah Kosa on the line. We will quickly get him back. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Well, it's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Let's read some of your text messages. And Gideon Amedome in Tema Community 9 says, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah built two lanes, and since then no government has been able to add even a lane, not even a major rehabilitation to the motorway. And Emmanuel Ayari says, our political leaders in the north should open their eyes and stop supporting people to fight and cause damage to properties. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Accra Behind the News. It's also live on Radio BAR 93.5 in Sinai Radio, Upper West 90.1 in White Water Star Radio, 91.1 or 91.3 in Ho. And still on this issue of Paul Afoko being given the green light to contest the NPP national chairmanship position, we are joined on the line by Ben Essen, who is the managing editor of the Dispatch newspaper. Good evening, Mr. Essen. Welcome to the program.
Good evening to you and your listeners.
Mr. Essen, were you surprised when this petition issue came up?
I was not surprised, but I was surprised at the way it was handled. I'm not saying that people in MPP wouldn't have handled it, but I think that given the seriousness of the business of chairmanship, of the national chairmanship, and the petition had come, if they had paid, I think, less than £30 to the Crown Prosecution Service, within a week, they would have had an answer, instead of telling him about the petition and let it hang for at least 2 weeks. I don't think that they handled it well.
So, in your view, the committee did not do well in the way it handled the issue?
I don't think they did well with that.
But then today, we understand Paul Afoko has been given the green light. And speaking just a while ago to Mr. J. Mensa Kosa, he is saying that they have not received a report of that petition yet, but time is of essence, and they have given the green light to Mr. Afoko. And how do you see this intervention?
You see, it confirms what I was just telling you. I mean, finding out if somebody has been, for example, convicted, within a week you get the result. For 3 weeks you're still hanging, you haven't received the report, so you have to clear him. Then what was the 3 weeks for? Because if I was to advise them before, I would say, look, don't do the vetting for the chairmanship. Just don't let it be out. Someone has petitioned, you just find out within 10 days, you know that it's true or not. So after 3 weeks of uncertainty, if I achieve nothing, I don't think that the unity of the party, of a big political party like the NPP, can be toyed with. You know, I'm not blaming that anybody didn't do well, but for the 3 weeks that you couldn't do it, the man has had to do double work. He goes anywhere campaigning. They say, but this is hanging over you. What if I vote for you? So, even though they haven't received the report, they still put them a bit of uncertainty. What if the report comes in true? Well, for all we know, it is somebody who has lied for this purpose. I don't think that, I haven't lived in Britain for all that much, but I know that it can take them at least a week, maximum 10 days, to find out if that a petition is true. So I believe that having declared, they should allow Mr. Afoko to go on with his campaigning.
But could it also be that it was from pressure from the supporters of Mr. Afoko, that's why they've given him the green light?
Well, I think that there's rightly the supporters not a rat. That there was some underhand dealings. It wasn't just a petition to check on ABC. They felt right, perhaps, they felt that, look, we need to be very careful. Maybe somebody is trying to do Mr. Foucault in making those who hold those allegations. Because I'm saying it's very easy to find out if the A or Madam B have been convicted. And they are saying 3 weeks they couldn't have done it.
But Mr. Hussein, listening to the comments that were making rounds when this petition issue came up, would you have been surprised if Mr. Afoko had been denied the opportunity to contest the national chairmanship position?
I'll be very frank with you. I'd have been very surprised. Because there was nothing to it, and all along I smelled that it was a mischievous attempt to try and frustrate Mr. Afoko in his campaign.
Mr. Epstein, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. I will call you back again on another issue pretty soon. Ben Epstein is the managing editor of the Dispatch newspaper. And Dr. Evans Agridako is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana. Good evening, Doc, and you're welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for having me.
Doc, What does the clearing of Mr. Afoko mean for the upcoming national executive elections of the NPP?
Yeah, thank you very much once again. You see, our constitution clearly indicates that the various political party seeking to win elections and control the levers of government in this country must also exhibit internal, you know, democratic credentials. And thus, what we are saying is that the processes must be fair, the field must be level, even though you know that sometimes the field is not even. Nobody should be denied a rightful opportunity to contest some of the positions. And so for me, even if somebody has something hanging around his neck or some petition hanging around, the various actors within the party, the rank and file, should see these processes as very fair, you know, to all the key actors. You see, any time a section of political party that strongly supporters believe that there are some indications or some movements within the party to get some people out or some very sensitive positions, you create this affection in the party. And if you are not careful, you create what I refer to as faction within the party, which can really undermine the growth and development of that party. So for me, if the man has been, you know, cleared to contest, it's good for the party. But for me, indecision, right? Indecision is one of the fundamental enemies of man that we must deal with. The back and forth will not help. If the processes are fair to all manner of persons, then you should be interested in prosecuting whatever, you know, seeing to the conclusion, full closure of some of the key issues that you seek to implement. But all in all, the decision to clear him is a good one. It will help the party clear, you know, close their ranks. The key actors who were, you know, complaining about some underhand dealings and some unconventional attempt to get the man out of the contest will now perhaps rally behind, even though I think that this has also, you know, damaged his reputation to some extent and perhaps undermined his chances of maybe winning, you know, the slot. But all in all, I think it's a good thing for the party. You, as a party on key decision makers within the party, I think one of the things that they also ought to know is that you need to be sensitive to what the rank and file will think about the key decisions that you take. If you are fair and firm, you damn the consequences. But of course, you, politics is a game of numbers. And so normally, what the rank and file will say sometimes, you know, plays a critical role in the decision, the ultimate decisions that you will take. And so for me, it's a good thing. And I believe that the man will organize himself and and go around and do his campaign. And then they should be able to heal their wounds, close their ranks. Because contests of ideas, sometimes some people may want to use some unconventional methods. That's human nature. But if the processes are fair to all manner of persons, to all the key actors contesting, then, you know, the key actors, the decision makers, would have prosecuted the agenda as key decision makers of the party, you know, going forward. Yes.
Doc, I'll indulge you to hold the line for me. Earlier, we lost Martin Ajay Kosa on the line. He's the director of elections of the NPP, and he's joining us on the line. Welcome back, Mr. Ajay Mensah Kosa.
Good evening.
You were making a point about the report not yet out and time is of essence. That's why Mr. Afoko has been cleared when the line dropped.
Is that I make a direct reference to some news that is circulating in some aspects of the media. A certain information such as a court in the UK releasing a comprehensive report, and I'm saying those are all false. I again heard an attempt by somebody pretending to be speaking from the petition that came before Mr. Foko. But first of all, I just need to set up this quite straight. We engaged Mr. Foko in a vetting process. The vetting process, as part of many if you like, reasons was to establish, one, the suitability of all the candidates, including Mr. Foku. Two, to establish also certain demands of our constitution.
Hello, Mr. James Akosa.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Please go ahead.
Yes. To establish also certain issues that have to do, or if you like, some grounds for disqualifying a candidate according to our constitution. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes. And I'm saying that also there are grounds for disqualifying a candidate. So two issues are quite instructive in the vetting process. One, looking at the suitability of the candidate. Two, making sure that you consider our own constitution and what it lays out in this whole vetting process. A petition such as what we are looking for, or we are talking about, came before the committee, alleging some things against Mr. Foku. Now, included in those allegations were some which infringe on the constitution and for which the constitution demanded that if anybody fell short or fell foul or, you know, fell in those circles, could be disqualified. It created every basis, every necessity to be investigated. Mr. Foku had his credibility at stake. The committee, as well as the party, if you like, also had its own image at stake and had to work to ensure that we clear whatever doubts or whatever allegations that had come. To that extent, regardless of whatever spin anybody will put or interpretation, we are not about to show any regret whatsoever. We feel what we did was right. We did not act to undermine anybody's campaign. We did not act to, if you like, unfairly against anybody. In any case, four people had put themselves up for the chairmanship position. Three had been vetted. At the end of the vetting, one had an issue to be looked into, following which the vetting was suspended. Other positions had been called for balloting of positions on the ballot. Those people have had the opportunity of touring the country using those positions to campaign.
Well,
whatever benefit lies in there for all candidates, the three other candidates to Mr. Foku have been denied that opportunity through no fault of theirs. I don't know why anybody is not talking about that. Mr. Foku arrived on the 13th of February after the vetting. When it was made known to him that the vetting had been suspended, was asked to campaign freely like any other candidate. At no point did we act against Mr. Foku, and we also had stated publicly everywhere on every platform that Mr. Foku was not guilty of any allegation. We even did not, in fairness to Mr. Foku, put the content of the allegation public.
All right. So in taking the decision today, did you show the content of the petition to Mr. Foku before clearing him, and what was contained in the petition?
Important featured the discussion in view of all manner of persons who are parading and putting a spin and creating a certain impression. For me, that is even more important than the decision that is out. Because when people do such interpretation analysis, it leads to one conclusion, and that must be resisted. It is just not fair to our work. We acted rightly, and we have no regrets for what we did. Come to the decision. I indicated that the committee has not yet gotten the report we requested for the investigation that we set out to do. However, we have decided that Mr. Foku can run the election. And that is not a decision we are about to contest or, if you like, to go into with anybody.
But
that rests entirely with us. Mr. Foku today met the committee to complete his vetting. That he can proceed to campaign.
Well, Mr. J. Mesakosa, what will you do when the report comes out and it confirms the issues raised in the petition? What happens to Mr. Foku's candidature?
My dear, at this point, the vetting committee, of which I am a member, sat today
met Mr. Foko and feel that Mr. Foko is cleared to contest. Oh. And that,
so what happens next now that he has been cleared? When is the balloting going to be done?
Hello.
Hello.
It was made to clear to Mr. Foko that we were not yet in receipt of that report.
All right. So what happens next? When will the balloting be done?
We would communicate that in due course.
All right, Mr. Ejaymensah, of course, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Martin Ejaymensah, of course, is the Director of Elections of the NPP. And coming back to you, Dr. Agri Zako, if you can hear me. Now, how does Mr. Foko go about clearing his image and making up for lost time?
Well, you see, once a petition is submitted to the committee, and unfortunately, I would have loved to, it would have been in the best interest of the party and Mr. Foko and everybody within the party if the report had really come, and then the petition perhaps would have been debunked, or allegations within the petition would have been debunked by the report. Because, look, we talked about our chairmanship here, okay? So if you have a chairman, I mean, the credibility of the chairman invariably affects the credibility of the party. Because, I mean, you are leading a whole party which has the capacity of winning elections in this country and governing all of us. And therefore, all the key actors who seek to lead that party must come with a certain pedigree and must come with a certain dignity. They come with a certain credibility. And so, I don't know why the report has delayed up to this time, for which reason the committee decided to disregard, you know, whatever report that will come and then declare him fit for contest. But let's look at the larger picture. The larger picture will be, I mean, let's look at the worst case scenario, for instance, that it comes and the allegations are contained in the petition are proven to be right. Then what it means is that, and perhaps let's assume that the person would have won, the slot to become the chairman. That becomes, you are literally giving an ammunition, an arsenal to your opponent, you understand, you know, the other political party, to demonstrate that, look, you know, this party is not a credible party. And, you know, you look at what is hanging around some of the key stakeholders. But I can understand, you know, the decision that they've taken, because the party then find itself in a dilemma. The key actors find themselves in a dilemma. The dilemma is that We have a report which we expect and which hasn't come. Time is not our best ally. Time is of the essence here. Do we go ahead? Because on the basis of what, I mean, the exigencies of the times dictate that, look, if they had time, then I would have suggested that they should wait for the report to come. Or if they have to pull some strings to get a report, they get it. But in this situation that the report is not in and time is not their best ally, they find themselves in a dilemma.
Right.
The dilemma is that how do we disqualify a person on mere allegation? That's one. And then the second point is that how do we even ensure that declare him to contest? And then, so I believe that they, in their minds, they had all sorts of problems. And then they have decided to go for this option for the sake of the peace within the party. They have decided to go for this option.
All right.
What all of us, you know, watchers can hope for is that the allegations are not true and that the man will actually contest and then occupy his rightful place if indeed he wins, and then be able to galvanize the party, you know, for the governance of this country if they have the opportunity to govern come 2016, yes.
Doc, we are very grateful for your time with us tonight.
Thank you very
Dr.
much for the opportunity.
Evans Agridako is a political science lecturer at the University of Ghana, Legon. And still on NPP issues, after a 6-month break from the political scene and graciously accepting the outcome of the election petition at the Supreme Court, The 2012 NPP presidential candidate Nana Akufo-Addo says he is in consultation with some key figures of the party to determine his political future. He told party supporters in Kumasi that he will come clear on his political future before the end of this month, and by then he'll be through with his consultation. So what does this mean? And Ben Essen has joined me again on the line. Welcome to the program, Mr. Essen. Hello, Mr. Essen, can you hear me? Well, it seems we've lost Ben Essen on the line. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, Accra. Behind the News is also live on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodia, Radio BR 93.5 in Sinai. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, Accra. Mr. Essen, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Essen, looking at Nana saying that he is in consultation with some key figures of the party to determine his political future, will you be surprised if Nana Addo on the 20th of this month says he's still interested in the NPP flag bearership position?
Well, I've known for the past 4 months that Nana will be going again. So I'll be very surprised if he says he's not interested and he's starting from politics.
But then,
I'll be very surprised.
Looking at his age, will it be advisable for him to still pursue politics? Or?
Well, I'm sure, I mean, he said he was going to seek God's guidance then too physically. I mean, 2016, he'll be 70. I think he'll be 70 on March 29th. So by 2016... he'll be heading towards 73, 2 months into 2017. But he has the strength. And I think that once he decides he will contest, he cannot do the rigorous thing he did in 2008 and 2012. Clearly, he felt, you know, he's growing. But the important point is that for both parties, it is not your total strength that you help you in terms of support of your party. You need the growing floating voters, which could be as high as 20-25%. That is the key. If you decide, now a few things happening are also antagonizing people in the party that, okay, everybody says they want Nana, and they're not giving a plain level field. When 2016 comes, they'll fold their arms. And this is called apathy, which hurts parties. So I'll be very surprised if he says he's quitting politics.
Well, some people are now saying, no, Nana, no, 2016. What does this mean for their party? Does it liven the chances of the party in the 2016 elections?
Well, let me say, persons who have access to media are saying, no, Nana. Have you gone underground? Because if you are reading what the media is saying in terms of 2008 and 2012, you never think that the NDC will have a chance of winning. So for those who think that no vote is the beginning and the end, you know, of their desire, I think that it will be a bit misplaced. It's those who want Nana, who have access to the media, who are amplifying that message.
And Mr. Essen, what do you also make of the pronouncement by some of the NPP regional chairmen endorsing Nana Addo?
That is a recipe for disaster in the party. Because a regional chairman, you're supposed not to take sides with regards to these aspirants. So you come out, and now if somebody supports another candidate apart from Nana, what happens is that when Nana's candidacy is confirmed, he's not the flag bearer. Come 2012, he will not go out and vote. And this attack has happened, if you look at since 2004, MPP's vote, Nana Akufo-Addo's vote in the two main regions, their political strongholds, Ashanti and Eastern, they've been dropping because of things like this. How can a regional chairman go out and support one of possibly four candidates? It doesn't work that way. That is the danger MPP must guard against.
All right, Mr. Epson, we want to thank you for your time with us. tonight. Then Essen is the managing editor of the Dispatch newspaper. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Unique FM 95.7. In Accra, Ura Radio 89.7. Bogatang and Radio Savannah 91.2. In Tamale, let's read some of your text messages. And Emmanuel Ayarik says that God bless Radio Ghana for your hard work. Kojo Akins in Cape Coast says, do we have an effective opposition? When is Nanado and NPP going to tell us about what the opposition is not doing right? Mind you, we need to access them too. And Harry Dake says, please ask the Deputy Minister of Info, Deputy Minister of Education, where is the feeding fund? He said government has made available to colleges of education to cater for the level 100 teacher trainings for this year. Many thanks for your text messages. Now to the next story. The strength of a country's currency to a large extent determines the stability of its economy as well as a healthy micro and macro environment. The Ghanaian currency, the Cedi, has for years struggled to hold its own against the major currencies of the world. So when the Bank of Ghana recently issued directives to halt the falling Cedi, the expectation was that in the not too distant future, the problems in the economy would equally become stable. But is that what has happened after more than a month of the Bank of Ghana directives? We will be speaking with the Deputy Minister of Finance and MP for Ejumaku Enyai Sim Castle at Forsen. But first, let's talk to Kweku Kwarteng, who is a member of the NPP economic team and also member of the Finance Committee of Parliament. Good evening, Mr. Kwarteng. You are welcome to the program.
Good evening to your listeners.
Mr. Kwarteng, you are an economist apart from being an MP. Have you picked up any signal regarding the impact the Bank of Ghana directives have had on the stability of the Cedi and by extension the economy?
Well, I think any observer of the forex market would agree that there has been some stability, but I'm cautious calling it stability because the time is too short and we are yet to see the full impact of the Bank of Ghana directives. When I say full impact, it's not just on the exchange rate dynamics, but also on business itself. The traders who are complaining that they go outside to shop around and to pay small money here and there, how have the regulations, the directives the Bank of Ghana brought responded to such concerns? There have been other concerns, other practical difficulties, because as many people indicated, in principle, yes, we shouldn't encourage people using forex to do transactions in Ghana. And so you want to put in these measures to ensure that forex is used solely for the purposes of cross-border transactions. But if in the process of doing that you frustrate economic activity, you probably would want to review the measures. So in order to understand the full impact of the Bank of Ghana measures, we should be looking not just at the forex dynamics, but we should also be in due course watching our traders and watching cross-border transactions and seeing whether the administrative procedures put forward by the Bank of Ghana is really making it easier to do business or more difficult to do business. Because ultimately, we want our economy to grow, we want economic activities to be vibrant and expand. And if the measures are hurting those ones, we need to review. But broadly, what I would say is that in terms of the forex, foreign exchange dynamics, we are seeing some stability, but I think it's too short a time to draw conclusions yet.
But experiences have shown that any time we take measures to halt the depreciating cedi, they only seem temporal. And before you say, Jack, it starts falling again. And are the Bank of Ghana measures capable of holding the cedi out for the long haul?
No, the measures alone would be insufficient. I mean, let's face it. In 2012, when the Bank of Ghana issued similar measures, it had a certain stability effect, because I'm one of those who believe that partly responsible for the sharp fall of the cedi was the activity of speculators. Now, once you bring a measure like that, the speculators wedge to see how things will turn out before they pursue their speculative activity. So it is always the case that once the measures come out, you see some stability. The question to ask going forward is that, will this stability be durable? Now, I look for the answer, not in the measures themselves, but I go to look at our trade balance. If we are importing more than we are exporting, if in total we are spending more foreign exchange than we are earning, you add all the transfers and all that, and increasingly you see a gap, a deficit, it tells you that no matter the measures, the administrative measures you put in place in your country, you're going to run into difficulty at some point. So if you ask me whether the Bank of Ghana measures will be successful, I would say that in the short term, yes, they would correct some of the speculative activities of people who do not have good intentions and want to beat the system. But in the long term, what you really want to do is to ensure that you are able to earn the kind of foreign exchange you spend. Okay. If not, your city is bound to run into difficulty along the line.
All right. Mr. Kwating, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Kweku Kwating is a member of the NPP economic team and also a member of the Finance Committee of Parliament, and we are joined on the line by Deputy Minister of Finance and MP for Ejumako Enyensim, Castle Atu Forsen. Good evening, Mr. Forsen. You are welcome to the program. Well, it's unfortunate we lost Mr. Forsen there on the line. It's Behind the Knees live on Radio Ghana Accra. It's unfortunate we couldn't get Mr. Atu Forsen there on the line. But let's read some of your text messages. Nongo Daniel from Pando says, when you miss an opportunity, don't close your eyes with the years. And please go ahead to contest for the next 2016 general elections. You'll surely be victorious. Rosemond Atakura says, the green shows that Mr. Paul Afuku is whiter than snow. And Turo Godfred in Wawa says, to be peaceful doesn't necessarily mean you have everything, and to have everything does not necessarily mean you have peace. Hence, let's give premium to peace. Good night, and good night to you too, Turo. Many thanks for all your text messages, and this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. George Kwaku controlled the sounds, and my producers were Edmund Tete Bryant Agama, Phyllis Coffey, John Poby, and Celestine Navi. Rosemary Gacy read the summaries. My name is Agatha Samoa. You have a lovely night.